We can put together the evidence that's come from the chemical studies of purified components of the membrane together with the physical studies and biological studies of intact membranes. And this diagram attempts to assimilate all that information. The horizontal lines in a greyish purple colour represent the phospholipid bilayer of the inner mitochondrial membrane, and the structures shown as complex 1, complex 3 and complex 4 represent the associations of the respiratory components. Shown in orange are the more mobile components of this system. Ubiquinone or coenzyme Q and cytochrome C are shown as orange circles, and these are free to shuttle backwards and forwards in the membrane to carry electrons or hydrogens from one complex to the other. We understand that the redox values of the various components allows us to state that the components present in complex 1 will be the flavour proteins and iron sulphur proteins. Complex number 3 will have cytochromes B and cytochrome C1 plus various iron sulphur proteins. And the final complex, complex 4, will have cytochromes A and cytochrome A3 as their tightly bound components. One of the features that we should note here is that protein complexes are understood to be tightly integrated proteins in the membrane, but with surfaces of the proteins extending out both into the matrix and into the intermembrane space. At the bottom of the diagram, we can see the reduced cofactor NADH and its accompanying proton, which could have been produced by any one of the number of oxidative reactions taking place in the matrix, such as reactions of the TCA cycle or fat oxidation. The NADH, being a soluble cofactor, diffuses up towards the inner mitochondrial membrane, and then the chemical properties of the components of complex 1, the flavour protein cofactor, be ideally suited to accept the pair of hydrogens from the reduced cofactor NADH, to accept these and thereby reoxidize the NADH to NAD. From this point on, hydrogens and electrons flow downstream towards the right of the diagram, as represented by the red arrow in this diagram, so electrons will be flowing down their electrochemical gradient towards oxygen. And on the right of the diagram, we can see again the red arrow indicating that the electrons will be transferred from the last cytochrome A3, onto oxygen. The pair of protons will be taken up from the matrix buffers, and the combination of all those components will give rise to water as the end product. As each of these oxidation reactions take place for each transfer of either hydrogens or electrons to the next carrier, these are hexagonic reactions. Free energy will be liberated during these processes. The evidence supports the idea that as these redox reactions occur, sufficient energy is released. Gibbs free energy, delta G values will be high, and in doing so, that sufficient energy for some kind of conformational change to take place in these protein complexes, so that the proteins either rotate or move subtly in the membrane in such a way that the matrix side of the protein can pick up protons from the matrix compartment, from the buffers in the matrix compartment, and these protons can be transferred across the membrane and released to the intermembrane space. In other words, the energy released in the redox reactions, in the transfer electrons from one carrier to the next, that energy is sufficient for these complexes to act as proton pumps, passing hydrogen ions from the matrix side to the intermembrane space. This can occur at complex number 1, and that's shown there by the yellow highlighted protons. Complex 1 is a proton pumping complex. Complex 3 again is responsible for the transfer of protons from the matrix side of the membrane across to the intermembrane space. And that is also true for complex number 4, again highlighted in yellow. The That's responsible for the transfer of protons from the matrix side of the membrane to the intermembrane space. As the complexes within the membrane continue to transfer electrons from the left-hand side of the diagram, from NADH, through the various components to the right of the diagram, and finally pass them to oxygen, the energy changes will be sufficient to pump protons across from the matrix side to the intermembrane space, so that a proton gradient will accumulate. Protons will begin to accumulate in the intermembrane space, and providing both the outer and inner membranes are intact and protons cannot diffuse back again, then this proton gradient will continue to increase. And there is good chemical evidence to show that such a proton gradient does indeed accumulate. Different textbooks have different ways of representing this complex process, and this is an alternative diagram showing the phospholipid membrane in blue and the respiratory complexes 1, 3 and 4 shown as these grey structures. As shown in the previous diagram, protons are pumped across the membrane from the matrix side to the intermembrane space. And the evidence supports the idea that the pH difference between those two compartments is about one pH unit, with the matrix increasing in pH value to about pH 8, whereas the intermembrane space has a pH measurable at about pH 7. One other consequence of the accumulation of protons in the intermembrane space is that the membrane potential changes. As protons are pumped across, there's a surplus of positive charges on the intermembrane space side of the membrane and a relative decrease in the potential on the inner surface. The two together are known as the proton motive force, both a gradient of hydrogen ions and a difference in the membrane potential on the two different surfaces. There are many thousands of copies of the respiratory complexes within a typical inner mitochondrial membrane, and also many thousands of copies of another integral protein known as the mitochondrial ATP synthase protein, or the F0F1 protein. And the structure of this is represented here. The part of the protein that's embedded in the membrane, the F0 part, has a hole down the middle, a channel through which protons can pass. The lower part of the structure, the F1 head, which projects out into the matrix compartment, has the ability to combine together one molecule of ADP and one molecule of inorganic phosphate to make ATP as protons flow through the F0 channel, passing down their concentration gradient. And as the protons flow through, this directs the synthesis of AT, with approximately 3 protons diffusing through, directing the synthesis of each ATP molecule. This then is an example of a motor protein, the chemical coupling of a proton gradient with the direct synthesis of ATP. Now, providing both the outer mitochondrial membrane and the inner mitochondrial membrane are intact and there's no other route by which the protons can get back from the intermembrane space to the matrix, then this ATP synthase is the only route by which the protons can flow back down their concentration gradient. This acts as a very efficient mechanism for linking together a physical process, the accumulation of a proton gradient and the creation of a membrane potential, linking then a physical process to a chemical process with the synthesis of ATP. This diagram puts together these two parts of the story. It shows the respiratory complexes 1, 3 and 4 in the membrane, and the oxidation of the cofactor NADH leading to the pumping of protons across the membrane and the accumulation of the proton gradient. The presence of the F0F1 protein in the membrane, providing all the membranes are intact, allows the proton gradient to direct the synthesis of ATP as active respiration takes place. And at the bottom of the diagram is just a summary again of the chemical components of the cytochrome chain. This diagram is taken from another textbook and shows the effect of having two intact membrane systems, the outer mitochondrial membrane and the inner mitochondrial membrane, allowing active respiration to pump protons from the matrix compartment to the intermembrane space. And it emphasizes the way in which the ATP synthase, the F0F1 protein, is the only way in which in intact mitochondria the protons can pass back downwards down their concentration gradient to the matrix. Again, emphasizing the linking of a physical process, the movement of protons, to a chemical process, the synthesis of ATP. This is another summary diagram showing again that in the intact inner mitochondrial membrane there are many copies of the respiratory complexes 1, 3 and 4. However, one additional feature we should now discuss is the fact that in both the TCA cycle and in fat oxidation there is an example of enzyme reactions which produce not just NADH but also the reduced flavine cofactors FADH2. Now, as we've already discussed, the redox potentials of the flavor protein complexes have lower values than those of the reduced cofactor NADH. And shown in the bottom of the diagram is the way in which the flavine cofactors are reoxidized. As the reduced cofactor FADH2 is produced by the succinate dehydrogenase reaction of the TCA cycle, the succinate dehydrogenase enzyme is tightly linked to a complex, an additional complex known as complex 2, which is embedded in the mitochondrial membrane. As the succinate is oxidized to fumarate, the cofactor FAD becomes reduced to FADH2, and this passes its electrons directly to complex 2, which then passes the hydrogens and electrons to coenzyme Q, or ubiquinone, which then passes the electrons to complex 3, and then finally, moving to the left, to complex 4. What should be noted here is that the hydrogens from the FADH2 cofactor are not passed to complex 1 of the respiratory system because of the difference in the redox potential values. This means that one less pumping station, proton pumping station, is involved in the reoxidation of flavine-based cofactors compared to the oxidation of NADH. We're now in a position to discuss the ATP yields from the different stages of metabolism. It's possible to do measurements on isolated mitochondria and to measure something known as the PO ratio, that is the experimental value for the number of ATP molecules produced for each molecule of oxygen gas that's used up by mitochondria. And the apparatus that's used for this is something known as the oxygen electrode. So over various decades, careful measurements have been made of the PO ratio, the amount of ATP synthesized for the reoxidation of various metabolic substrates by measuring the amount of oxygen consumed by the mitochondria. Careful measurements during the 1960s, 70s gave typical values that the ATP yield from the reoxidation of most substrates that used NAD as the cofactor gave a yield of 3 ATP molecules for each atom of oxygen taken up by the mitochondria. For the reasons that we've just discussed, reactions that use a flavine-based cofactor, reactions such as the succinate dehydrogenase reaction or the first step in beta oxidation, the reoxidation of the FADH2-based substrates gave a yield of two ATP molecules rather than three, as has been said before, because one proton pumping site is missed out, so a slightly fewer numbers of protons are pumped across the membrane. Those with the values 3 ATP and 2 ATP molecules for each cofactor were accepted for several decades, but more careful measurements made during the 1980s and 90s confirmed that in fact it was not an exact number of ATP molecules that were made, and more closer values of 2.5 molecules of ATP were synthesized for each NADH linked reaction, and 1.5 molecules of ATP were made for each flavin-based cofactor reoxidized. One shouldn't be too worried about a non-integral, non-exact number of ATP molecules made during these processes, because for each turn of the TCA cycle or beta oxidation, there are very many molecules of NADH and FADH2 produced, so that the overall arithmetic will result in whole numbers of ATP made. Like most metabolic processes that are involved in energy conservation, there is very tight control over the rate of this process of oxidative phosphorylation, so that fuel molecules are not unnecessarily oxidized unless the cell has a need for the ATP, which is, after all, the overall function of this process. Careful studies of mitochondria have shown that the rate of oxidative phosphorylation is carefully regulated within the cell by the levels of ATP and ADP within each mitochondria. And as would be predicted by the common sense dictates of this type of system, an increase in the concentration of ADP, which would indicate that the cell has an active need for metabolic energy, an increased concentration of ADP results in an increased rate of respiration, an increased rate of substrate oxidation, and an increased rate of oxygen uptake. When the cell has adequate levels of ATP, as the concentration of ATP increases, then this regulates the activity of the F0F1 protein, and the increase in ATP levels within the mitochondria will result in a decreased rate of oxygen uptake and a decreased rate of metabolic respiration. Early studies of the process of oxidative phosphorylation during the 1950s, 60s and 70s depended very much on the careful study of the effects of inhibitors such as cyanide and rotenone and carbon monoxide and azide, their effects on the individual components of the system. Less attention is paid to these now. They were very much experimental procedures, but it should be noted that the common poison cyanide and also carbon monoxide will have a severe inhibitory effect on the pathway of respiration, particularly by binding to the last component of the respiratory system, the cytochrome oxidase, cytochrome AA3 complex. There are other substances which have an effect not of inhibiting the rate of respiration through the cytochrome chain, but in fact increasing the rate of metabolic respiration. These substances are known as uncouplers, and the most well known of these is the chemical dinitrophenol, or DNP for short. Dinitrophenol was shown to have a very effective uncoupling effect on mitochondria. This is a lipid soluble molecule which can diffuse into the membranes of the mitochondria. And when it's present in the inner mitochondrial membrane, it acts as a proton diffuser. It's a weak acid, a lipid-soluble weak acid. It picks up protons from the intermembrane side of the membrane and transports them back across the membrane to the matrix side of the membrane. In this way, it transfers protons, as it were, through the backdoor process of the mitochondria, not going through the ATP synthase complex, and thus dissipates the proton gradient, without any effective ATP synthesis. Uncoupling molecules therefore increase the rate of respiration in an attempt to maintain the proton gradient, and therefore increase the rate of oxygen consumption, but with very ineffective ATP synthesis. Dinitrophenol is an example of an artificial or chemical uncoupler, but certain cell types within the body contain a natural uncoupler, a protein known as thermogenin, which is found in particular adipose tissue cell types known as brown adipose tissue. This type of tissue is found particularly in newborn human babies in across the back, shoulder blade area and the back of the neck, and these tissues are capable of responding to increased levels of adrenaline or noradrenaline in the bloodstream and increasing the amount of the thermogenin protein, and this uncouples metabolism so that fat in particular can be utilized as a fuel with less ATP production, but the respiratory energy that's released dissipated as heat, which then increases the temperature of the tissues and the blood flowing through the capillaries of these tissues. Hibernating animals such as the polar bear and hedgehogs are also believed to have a similar system of an uncoupling protein present in their adipose tissue, which as the spring months approach and the day length lengthens, there's a biological signal which increases the amount of uncoupling so that stored fat in the body can be utilized to raise the body temperature of these animals so that they're prepared for coming out of hibernation.